Hello, Rock and Roll Rebels, and welcome to another episode of Ramble On with Rosie. If I sound a little different, I was sick this week, so bear in mind my voice is a little off, but I am still here to bring you the good old rock and roll on the continuing topic of Rory Gallagher. So, after, as I mentioned in my previous episode, I went on a sort of break from Rory after the heartbreak of not being able to go to the Rory Gallagher Festival in Ireland in 2020 for obvious reasons. Upon returning to him, I'm kind of almost glad I took the break because I didn't realize prior how amazing of a songwriter he is. He's really more of a poet than a songwriter. Like, his words don't always necessarily rhyme, but if you just read out the lyrics, it reads like poetry quite often. Not always. I mean, depends on the song. And that was a dynamic of his music that I had not noticed before. So taking that break and coming back to his songs really gave me that perspective that I didn't have before. So I'm kind of glad I did, even though I, you know, went a year and a half without listening to his music, which is my loss because his music is phenomenal. And I figured it would be a good topic to discuss because it's not often discussed. Everybody talks about his guitar playing for obvious reasons because, I mean, the man got Clapton back into the blues, taught Brian May how to play guitar better, and had a wide influence. In fact, that, I don't know, it's not old wives' tale, but one of those misattributed sayings that may or may not be true is that Hendrix, when asked what's it like to be the world's greatest guitar player, responded with, "I don't know, ask Rory Gallagher," which may or may not be true because I've also heard that applied to some other guitarists. But Rory's in the circulation of people that Hendrix might have considered even better than himself, so that alone says something about his playing. And so I feel like his playing goes without saying. You can go and listen to it. But the thing about Rory's music, his songs as a whole, you can listen to them without really paying attention to the lyrics, and they're still very good songs, very enjoyable. Even I, who am a self-professed lyrics fan, I mean, that's why I'm such a huge Springsteen fan, wasn't paying attention to his lyrics till I came back and revisited his songs. I mean, I knew a couple of them. Like, I liked the lyrics Jukebox Annie because I kind of liked the sound of this chick. She sounded kind of cool but kind of tough at the same time, and I was like, yeah, I identify with that gal. But other than the obvious things like that, I wasn't really paying attention to the you know, the depth and craftsmanship in his songwriting until this revisit. And I'm a lyrics person, so like I said, his songs can totally be enjoyed independent of his lyric writing. But, like we're going to discuss today, his lyric writing definitely bears looking at. It's really good. I mean, he's either discussing a topic that doesn't get discussed a lot, or he's got a new angle or a new way of saying things. He's a very original artist. Like, there's not a lot of artists that you can 100% say this is our original dude. And while some of his songs are pretty much patterned off of that old blues song, you know, template of like the woman done me wrong or my friends got me in trouble kind of stuff, a lot of his aren't doing that. They're not mimicking things lyrically, and even when he is, you know, working off of that template of old blues musicians' lyrics, his music is still crazy original. I mean, he's sort of mixing flavors of jazz and folk and blues and rock and roll all into this wonderful melting pot of his. So, like, that aside, because I'm telling you all this in case you haven't listened to some Rory, which you need to do. It's Irish Heritage Month. Go do your duty and listen to some Irish artists. Specifically the ones that don't get played enough, like Rory, because you can go almost anywhere and hear Van Morrison and U2. You can't really hear Rory played much of anywhere at all. So, I'm here to shed a light on one of Ireland's finest products, Mr. Rory Gallagher and his songwriting capabilities is this week's particular focus. So diving into that, starting with his first album and the first song on his first album, Laundromat, I'm just putting this in here because I think it's kind of funny and hilarious and very unique that he's making the laundromat the happening spot in his song. Like, it's not let's go to the hop or the live-in or, you know, the pub, the bar, you know, whatever. Not even the burger joint. No, no, it's the laundromat. I mean, let's all be real, laundromats sort of feel like their own weird alternate dimension anyways. Like, you're just in there, killing time, watching your clothes spin round and round next to strangers, washing who knows what in their machines, and you may talk to each other or you may share this space without having any sort of communication. Like, laundromats are like a weird, they have a whole different vibe. Fight me on this, but it's true. So, I thought that was kind of fun, and based off of the real life experience of going down to his apartment's laundromat and, you know, practicing his instrument so he didn't disturb the apartment. So, has some real life context to his own life, and also laundromats are kind of a weird, unique space in the world. Especially for somebody who usually doesn't have to use one. So that's how Laundromat made the list, and it's just a fun song, you know, just for the fact he's singing about laundromats, if nothing else. The other song, also off of his first album, is Just the Smile, which I read somewhere, I don't have total verification, that he wrote it about his mother, and given the lyrical content, it definitely has that sort of vibe. It's a very sweet, poetic kind of song, very lyrically, you know, if you just read the lyrics and didn't know they were song lyrics, you could easily think it was a poem, which I get all songs lyrics are kind of poetic and poetry. They usually rhyme and whatnot, but not all of them feel like poems. Like, you're gonna go read the lyrics to Rock and Roll Hoochie Coo doesn't really feel like a poem. Now, you read the lyrics to Just a Smile or some of Rory's other songs that we'll get to, and they feel like a poem. They feel like you're reading something by Frost, or a sonnet, or maybe some Keats or Longfellow or something. But, like, they have that sort of vibe to them. I don't know how better to put it. I'm sure if I was an English professor or had a doctorate in music theory, I would know the correct terms that I'm going for, but they vibe like poems. They don't vibe like rock and roll song lyrics. And Just the Smile is very much that way. And, like, there, it's like I said, it very easily could be believable that it was written about his mother, even though I couldn't find verification that that is actually true. Because, I mean, there's a line like, the rain when it's falling all over the land, she cools my mind, cools down my mind when she touches my hand. Like, I mean, that's like a mother's love. Who else can calm you down when you're down or angry at the world? Moms are pretty good at that. So, really sweet and an interesting and poetic way of sort of putting it. You know, it's not often, it's not a generic boilerplate way of saying, this person makes my life better. You know, it's not, you mean so much to me, baby. Not that that's a bad thing to say, but this is like a very descriptive way of saying that this person means a lot to them. You know, that they're a good thing in their life. The other song is Maybe I Will, which has some very pastoral scenes to it, almost childlike. So we go from, like, the mother and the child to, like, revisiting one's childhood. I mean, the imagery with lines like, running through a pool of rain, I think I'll do it one more time again. I hope I always feel this way, maybe I will. Like, is this rock and roll or is this Christopher Robin? Because that has some serious Christopher Robin, Winnie the Pooh, idyllic childhood, you know, imagery to it. It's just very fun and innocent. And just very sweet. A lot of Rory's lyrics are really sweet like that. And they feel so genuine, especially when you read about what a soft-spoken, very polite kind of gentleman Rory was. I mean, he didn't like his bandmates, or rather band members, sort of when he had his own band, to swear at all and would actually get upset with them, which he didn't really do the upset thing much, like if they swore in front of women. So, like, he's a really unique character in the world of rock and roll and blues. Like, you don't normally think of a blues rock musician chastising their bandmates for swearing. So very, very sort of, that innocence that he carried was embodied in some of these songs, like Maybe I Will, where it's, that wholesomeness that he brought to his music and his songwriting and sort of in his overall demeanor. And the next song we're talking about is There's a Light, which is just has some clever ways of putting rather common topics. 'Cause there's the line, I can fly, but I won't go away. Like it was very, to me, a very cute and interesting way of weaving together two common themes that are in love songs of, I feel like I'm flying. That's often used as a description in love songs. They feel like I'm flying and I'm over the moon and all that. But I won't go away. It's a really sweet way of putting those two together and sort of adds an impact of like the hey, my head's in the clouds and I feel like I'm flying, but I'm also like a solid enough character that I'm not leaving because I like this person that much. So kind of tempers the two together while still staying very romantic. So I thought that was very well done on his part to sort of craft together two commonly explored themes in a song and put them in a new way of saying it where they relate to each other. In a way I can't really think of them being explored in any other song like that, even though there's two super common themes in songs. Flying and feeling like you're flying when you're in love, but also not wanting to be parted from the person that you're in love with. Like those are in most love songs. One or the other, either the elation or the, desperation to stay with that person, but I can't think of any other songs that really, like, tacked the two together, especially in such a, uniquely comparative way. So, A-plus songwriting there. Now, the next song, like I was talking about, is songs that feel like poems. Out of My Mind feels like some sort of Shakespearean sonnet. Like, not so much in the language specifically, but like some of Shakespeare's sonnets do and in other love poetry, it explores like the whole range of sensations you get when you're in love, like the elation, the yearning to be with that person, the heartbreak, and it does it all in a few lines of verse. Much like a sonnet, because I think sonnets, as a rule, are 14 lines of rhyming couplets, if I remember my poetry dynamic correctly. But anyways, so in a relatively short amount of time, he covers the full range of, what you experience when you're in love, the infatuation, the humiliation, the desperation, all of it. But he still, he isn't like getting too far flung and out there and trying to be up on himself. He's still using very common, normal, humble language in his lyrics. I mean, the line is, well, you took me out of my mind, you took me out of my head. My friends have gone to look for me, but I ain't been seen yet, which is a really kind of fun and charming way of putting things. And also he gets props for sort of, I don't know what the literary term for it would be, but he's sort of doing in the lyrics what he's, you know, with his change of person speaking, what he's talking about. Because he's talking about being out of his mind and out of his head, and phrasing it with, "My friends have gone to look for me, but I ain't been seen yet," feels like he switched from speaking in the first person to like a third person narrative. So it's like he's actually out of body, as well as being out of his mind and out of his head, because he's so, you know, crazy in love. So it's, that's a really clever thing to do, especially for somebody who, like, Rory didn't go to college. He doesn't have a degree in literature. He just found a way to use the very style of how he was writing to say what he was saying in the lyrics of the song. So it's there in, I guess, the syntax. I'm trying to remember my literary terms. It's there in the syntax, or whatever that term is, as much as it is in the words of what he's saying, which is super clever. Like, that is top-notch, you know, genius level songwriting. He's literally doing what he's singing about. You know, it's out of, it's an out of body song lyric while he's singing about being out of his mind and then out of his head. So I really like that. But it's not even my favorite Rory song. This next one might be, though, as far as just the beauty and poignancy of the song lyrics. Daughter of the Everglades is one of those songs that, like, took me from casual Rory fan to, this dude's really good. And in this case, even though I wasn't appreciating his lyric writing as much as I do now, Daughter of the Everglades was probably what I would have picked as his most lyrically strong song, even before I really started examining the lyrics of his music. And Daughter of the Everglades is off of the Blueprint album, and it feels like some sort of tragic poem, like Longfellow's Evangeline, or something like that. Of course, it's much shorter than those big, long, tragic poems tend to be. This thing probably lyrically is shorter than John Keats's The Pot of Basil, or one of those other ones. But it's got a lot of elements that are in those kind of poems. Like, there's an almost fae heroine. She's the child of the river. And she's got this somewhat mysterious background. It sounds like her mother died when she was young, and she learned to swim before she could walk, and her dad was a crazy talking Cajun fisherman. And there's like this, all this mythos behind this heroine that we've got here. And she does, especially being described as the child of the river, have an almost like fairy-like sort of aspect to her, like the heroines in poems often do, where, you know, it's this strange sprite being appeared on the crest of the hill. Like Keats's La Belle Dame Sans Merci, she's sort of this weird, was she there, did he imagine her kind of heroine in that Keats poem. And the Daughter of the Everglades has that aspect to her. And like I said, Rory, he finished, you know, his grammar school or whatever they call it in Ireland. But he didn't go to university or college or anything like that. In fact, he was on the road for like the last 2 years of his, you know, high school or the equivalent thereof in Ireland, whatever they call it. I don't quite understand the differences between European school grades and American, but he was, you know, sort of a sophomore roughly in high school when he sort of started taking his homework with him on the road and finishing it up and bringing it back, you know, and wasn't really in class because he was already in a touring show band. But that tangent aside, so here he is. He's not, you know, highly formally educated, and yet he's pulling from these poetic things. And I mean, part of it may be the fact that he is Irish and they do really dig their folklore and, you know, not just the leprechauns, but all the other, you know, banshees and other fae beings that wander around and cause mischief in people's lives. And he'd probably heard stories like this, you know, still in an oral tradition, even if he hadn't read them, you know, from the elders, you know, people that were older than him, grandparents, etc. Old men smoking in a pub, you know. So he's got this knowledge from somewhere on how to craft very poetic songs, that are pulling on some of those similar themes. And so like I said, the woman, the daughter of the Everglades, is very kind of fae in her, description. But that's not where the whole poetic similarities and the tragic aspect that is in a lot of poetry ends, because the closing lines of the song, which are interspersed with him calling out her, title of the daughter of the Everglades, are, "I want to feel you near," and "I must find you here." And like I said, it's interspersed with him calling for her, and then finally saying, "I can't see for my tears." It leaves it on such a tragic, melancholy note that you almost feel like assuming in this star-crossed situation that the hero, after returning to, we're assuming, the Mississippi River, just because he does mention riverboats in the song, hence why I'm just imagining it's the Mississippi, but after returning to find her after she left, because he had taken her to the city and she goes back to where she's from and drowns, and then he's going back to look for her, and that's when he finds out she's drowned, and that the song closing, especially with lines like "I want to feel you near," really gives you the impression that this dude's just walking into the river to join his beloved, which, can you get more of a traditional tragic poem kind of ending than that? This is straight up Romeo and Juliet kind of stuff going on here. It's that very poetic in the lyrics, but the vibe of the ending of the song very much has that, which is really complex and intricate and beautiful, especially coming from someone who's a bluesman and a rock and roller. Like, not a lot of rock and rollers I can think of have that much poetic complexity going on in their songs. Like, y'all know I love me some Springsteen, especially because of his songwriting. And I love it for the real life applicability, but he does not have this poetic aspect so much that I'm talking about with Rory, where it just, it's pulling off of these sort of mythic, not the full epic mythic themes, but he's borrowing little bits of that to weave into his own tapestry, which is a little bit more simple and rustic, and it's not Guinevere and Arthur, but it's his own little small, version of that, using similar themes in a more commonplace setting. And he does it so well. Like, it's phenomenal. So I can't discuss this enough. Like I'm saying, not all of his songs are like this, but he does have the capacity to write complex songs like this. And this is fairly early in his career. I mean, Daughter of the Everglades, I think Blueprint was his third solo album, maybe his fourth. So it's not like he's been, a seasoned songwriter for 27 years and is doing this in his, twilight time when he's had time to think and reflect on his life. The dude's like mid-20s, maybe? Late-20s at latest? I'm trying to think. 73. He died before he was 50, and he died in the 90s, so somebody else do the math. It's too late here. But point is, he's not that old. And he's writing really complex lyrics like this. Now, the next song is off of his Tattoo album, which also came out in 1973, because that's when Blueprint came out too, I believe. But anyways, Cradle Rock is one of the, it's like the second song on the album. And it's a song full of contrast, where you're like, it's not just the titular comparison of, "If I was a cradle, then you'd let me rock." But like, the whole song is built up of contrast, like, "If I was a pony, then you let me trot," which those are kind of original things. Like, that's sort of an original way to phrase a song, especially a song on a fairly common theme of accusing your lover of not treating you right. But He's also got this really fun comparison of if I was the atom, you'd split me into three. I mean, we're bringing nuclear physics into a blues song? That's a new one. Like, out of the sense of sexual chemistry and talking about some actual chemistry. It's really unique and fun. It just sort of takes you aback in a good way where you're like, oh, that was not something I've heard in a song before. But he still, he doesn't dwell on these interesting comparisons. He keeps coming back to the plain spoken point of, his girl's not treating him right. It's lines like, if you were true to me, baby, then you'd listen when I talk. Like, away from splitting the atom and back to the real point, of questions of her fidelity and, discussion of how much respect he's getting, which is something that definitely is in, like, your more traditional blues songs. Like, you hear a Muddy Waters song or Howlin' Wolf or somebody like that, and the discussions of their lady's fidelity and or how much respect they're get that she's giving him do often come up. So, like, he's mixing this really unique, original way that he phrases things with a very common theme from the songs that inspired him to play music in the first place. And the next song, also off of Tattoo, is Livin' Like a Trucker, which, for one, who outside of country musicians sings about truckers? Like, I thought that was one of those things like horses that pretty much only got sung about in country songs. Well, Rory is proving that wrong. And he also sort of gets this other really cool aspect going in the song, aside from just being original for being a non-country artist singing about truckers. But he sort of weds the life of the trucker and being on the road with like the musician life of being on the road to the point that you're not exactly sure which one he's singing about all the time. You're like, did he switch point of view? Is this the same point of view? Has this been about being a touring musician this whole time, or has this been about being a trucker the whole time? And so that's interesting to me. It's sort of like an up-tempo answer to Jackson Browne's The Loadout, or probably the other way around, because I think that album, Running on Empty, came out later than 1973, but I could be wrong. But they're very sort of, Living Like a Trucker is the driving song, and The Loadout is the staring out the window song on the same road trip. So Living Like a Trucker is the dude driving Jackson Browne's tour bus. More or less. But anyways, and I do love the whole vibe of one of the lines, which is, I've seen some places, but more I ain't seen yet, which is just so true of life. I mean, no one is ever going to have seen more places than places they haven't seen on this planet. Not very likely. Even if you are a touring musician who's been in multiple countries, there's still, geographically, it's pretty much impossible, I think, to see more places than you haven't seen yet. That involve seeing over half the square acreage of the world, which would be a pretty heavy accomplishment. But anyways, so that's Living Like a Trucker, which, like I said, I really like the vibe of the song. It's got a nice, good, like, it's a good driving song. Probably would drive over the speed limit if listening to it. Probably have done such, but that's beside the point. And going from trucking down the road to A Million Miles Away, which is the next song, it's, similar to, some folk songs in the theme, as in it's sort of, you don't catch it except for in some of the lines, but it's really kind of about this guy who survived some tragedy. There's the line of, I lost my captain and my crew. So it sounds like he's, a sailor, a fisherman, something like that. Which, interesting side note, cue the coincidence, I think not meme, at this point. But the Dubliners released a song in the same year as Tattoo came out. So in 1973, and Tattoo's the album that this is on. And Tattoo did not come out until November of 1973. And the Dubliners album couldn't find a month, but November is the second to last month in the year, so we can probably assume that there's a probability the Dubliners album came out first. And there's a song on it called Donegal Danny, which so much sounds like somebody encountering this character that Rory's singing about, who incidentally is at a hotel bar, while Donegal Danny in the Dubliners song is in a bar when he comes in, and he tells this tragic tale of his boat being lost in a storm, which sounds like kind of what Rory's character is going through in A Million Miles Away. And the real sort of clincher for me going, I consider this probably canon that he heard the song, is A, of course, the Dubliners and Rory are both Irish artists. So the likelihood of Rory hearing this song is far more likely than any non-Irish artist of hearing it, because it probably got played on Irish radio, or, you know, he heard it from somewhere there, may have even bumped into the band when he was touring in Ireland, as he did. So, like, it's not just that. So, number one evidence I'm submitting to the court is they're both Irish artists, so he's more likely to have heard the song than other artist in the world. And two, Rory was literally born in County Donegal, 15 minutes roughly from the city of Donegal. Now, I don't know about y'all, but when I hear songs about places in the country that I was either born in or grew up in, they stick with you more than songs about other places. So I'm willing to, like, bet some money, if somebody comes up with a time machine, that Rory, if he heard this song, would have definitely remembered it. Because it's like, oh, I was born there. You know, what's this song about? And therefore possibly got inspiration for A Million Miles Away from there. And that is my theory for the day, which I feel like is fact. I just need a time machine to go back and confirm it. And do a few other things with that time machine, like go and see all the bands that I love that are now dead or too old to be worth seeing. So I have a noble cause to go back in time travel for. The other causes are questionable and selfish, but this one is noble. I need to do research, but I feel like it's probable that he got some inspiration from the Dubliner song Donegal Danny for A Million Miles Away. And, so on that note, I will, conclude. This brings us up in his discography for, like, the first four albums or so, stopping at around 1973, because next week's topic should be, if I can get my act together, the Irish Tour 1974 concert film and, you know, album, and breaking that down for y'all. So, if you want to, and you totally should, watch that this week. Listen to it if you can't find the footage, but some of it's up on YouTube. I'm pretty sure it was. I mean, I haven't had to look since I bought the DVD of it, which is honestly worth buying. The Irish Tour 74, some of it was on YouTube, and it's obviously available on DVD, and if you can't do that, just listen to the concert album, which is on Spotify and all those places that have that kind of thing. And, you know, listen to that. Do it to celebrate St. Patrick's Day if you're not doing anything else this fine Thursday. But do it. So worthwhile. And on that note, well, I'll wish y'all a early happy St. Patrick's Day. Go wear some green and behave safely. Not necessarily totally responsibly, but safely. Wear some green, have some fun, and be kind to each other, and rock on.